This seance was recorded on the 29th. This seance was recorded on the 29th of July, 1966.
Well, I was here 2 weeks.
Not you. No, long time nattering.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Well,
you couldn't get
your... Oh, Flynn to come off talk, can't he?
Well, it all helps, doesn't it?
Well, yes, I'm only teasing.
Yes, of
course. But he likes a natter, don't he?
Oh, yes, rather.
And how was the world treating you?
Oh, quite all right, thank you, Mickey.
Good. I was looking forward to seeing you.
Yes, I do.
You were so interesting. Well, at least your husband is.
Yes, he is. there you are.
Do you go home and write it all out?
Yes, I usually do that. Takes me some days, you know.
And then you sort of whatever it is.
Well,
put it in order.
Yes, more or less.
How many books have you written?
Oh, I've only written one book.
Gonna write any more?
I don't know.
Oh, do you want to get this one published?
Yes, it's in Douglas's hands, isn't it, really? I'm sorry, dear. Yes, it does seem hard, doesn't it?
No, not at all. Although I must admit that, as far as I'm concerned, at times, anyway, it is difficult to do always what one would wish. You see, the whole point is that every human being has free will, and no one has the right to interfere with another person's free will. One can make suggestions, one can give counsel, one can advise, but you can never force anyone to do anything if it's against their nature or their desire. That's where we are stymied, you know.
Yes,
For instance, I mean, I would like to see the book published, but I cannot force anyone to publish it.
I can impress them.
If I can do my best to impress them to think favourably of it and consider the publication of it, and I may succeed, as indeed I have with one or two, in as regards them desiring to publish it, but then they have to put it before their board.
Yes.
And of course the board sometimes are prejudiced, the people, individuals are prejudiced against the subject, especially certain people. And it's impossible. You may succeed with one person who will place it before the board, and then you'll have two or three others on the board who say, oh no, we can't have anything to do with that sort of rubbish. You know how they
talk.
Yes,
of course.
And in consequence, it's impossible.
Yes.
That's the thing that's been happening all along the line in
yes,
regard
I know.
To this book.
Yes.
It's gone into several people's hands. It's been discussed. One or two have been favourable, the others haven't. And of course you cannot make people think otherwise if they don't want to, if they're adamant, if their minds are closed. You see, we've been fortunate in contacting one person in particular, who was very favourable, but it didn't rest with him entirely. He has had to put it in front of other people, and they said, oh no, we couldn't entertain that, you see.
Yes.
And in consequence, the book's unpublished.
Yes. Oh, well, one of these days, perhaps...
Everyone must work out in their own fashion, in their own way, their own salvation. That, I realize, more and more is obvious. I mean, a great teacher, a great prophet, Christ, for instance, comes into the world, sets an example, gives us our teachings and our way of life, and indeed gives us so much that would be our salvation. But if we choose to ignore it or have nothing to do with it and intend to go in the opposite direction, we cannot be forced. We can lead, but we can't be forced.
Yeah, of course.
And that's the tragedy with the world as it is today. The vast majority of people are only concerned with self. They're only concerned with material things. They're not concerned with things of the mind and of the spirit. And the few that are, their voice is like crying out in the wilderness.
Yes.
It's very problematic and very difficult. We can only try our utmost to make an impression, to put things before people and hope that they will accept it or inquire into it in regard to this truth, for instance. But you can't force it. You can't make people. In any case, it wouldn't be any good if a person did something with no will behind it, no real desire from within themselves. It would be a useless, pointless thing. It must come from within themselves. One can point the way, one can advise, one can guide, one can give good counsel, but you can never force anyone. That's the big problem. Anyway, what should we talk about?
Well, I was hoping you were going to continue your incarnations.
Oh.
You remember you were telling me all about your very early Egyptian incarnation.
Yes, I remember.
How you were a priest.
That's right.
Yes, I thought we had two together
in
Egypt.
We had three, actually, to be exact.
In Egypt.
Although one I remember so little about. But I understand, in fact, I'm sure we've had two, but I know that there's a possibility, almost certainty, of a third, but it's too dim.
Yes.
I can't recapture it at all. But of course, we've had so many. We had an incarnation in Italy, in the what was termed the Renaissance.
Oh, that'd be interesting. And, could you tell me about that?
Yes, I was a priest again.
Again?
Yes, I seem almost to have been searching and seeking.
Yes.
For a religious experience, and I was a priest I was about 18, I think, as far as I can gather, and I lived with a very old man, over 80.
Mm-hmm.
And I came of a very noble family, and I was disturbed in my mind in my youth in regard to, the whole way of life of the times, and of course being of a noble family, a big high family, I was given every opportunity to do all the things that I wanted to do, but I was so sort of disturbed and distressed at the appalling poverty around and about where we lived, which in those days was much worse than you can possibly imagine, and I made up my mind that I would use whatever wealth I had, whatever power I had to help the poor, which soon put me in disrepute with the people of my own standing. They
yes.
didn't like it. And in consequence, I realized that the situation was impossible. And I left the family. I left my family and I went into holy orders.
Yes.
This was at Padua.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, dear. Very interesting.
And I was concerned always with the poor peoples, and I studied medicine, and I learned what there was to be learned in those times of medicine, and I was very interested in herbs and the curative properties of herbs, and I studied medicine, and it was my job to look after the brothers and to look after the poor that came to us for help, and the sick and the suffering, and to give service to the dying. It was a very interesting period of my life, and of course I was a celibate, and I was not in any way involved with the opposite sex, and although I had known you when I was a young man, and it had been planned that we should marry, I turned my back on everything of life, including my love for you, as the only thing that was a temptation to me to hold on to my way of life. But my religious inclinations were so strong, and my desire to serve and to withdraw to some extent from the world, although I didn't withdraw barely, because although I went into this order, my work lay so much with the people around and about, and I went from place to place. I had a period of time when I had special dispensation to move, to leave the, not to leave the order, but to act in a sense on behalf of the order, to go from place to place, preaching the gospel, healing the sick and suffering, and also endeavoring to gain knowledge and also to write. I became something of a writer, and I wrote quite a number of volumes, which unfortunately, I regret to say, were destroyed. Some years after my death, there was a great fire, and the monastery was burnt down. And I travelled the whole length and breadth of Italy, and I travelled into France and into Spain. I learned several languages. I spent much time studying languages because I felt it was important if I was to do this work that I'd been asked to do, which I wanted to do, to know as many languages as possible. I spoke at least six languages apart from Latin.
Wonderful.
But you married, you know.
Oh, yes.
I discovered, I found, I heard, one does. Of course, in any case, for the first few years I was working very close to Padua, and in Padua itself, and you married a very rich man, and you had many children, and died comparatively young in your 30s.
Oh, yes.
Your name was Helena in that period. Oh. My name was Rodrigo.
Oh, so interesting.
Funny thing was that although I was Italian by birth, my mother was Spanish, and she married this Italian nobleman, and I was given a Spanish Christian name among many others, but I was referred to and known as Rodrigo.
Was that a fairly pleasant time to live in?
Well, no.
Not like that horrible time under Nero.
Oh, it wasn't. I mean, of course, from the point of view of a person of wealth and position, it was not exactly an uncomfortable time, because you were able to surround yourself with all the luxuries of that period. But there was such terrible disease and poverty.
Yes.
And there were no known cures for many of these things. And I became tremendously interested in medicines, made a big study of it. And indeed, I effected cures which had so far previously never been known.
Really?
I used to ride by horse throughout the width of Europe, practically, you might say. Well, certainly a lot of Europe. And I was killed. This may strike you as strange, although I lived to be quite an old man, and by all natural causes I should have died of old age, I was killed by an accident of some slating falling from a roof onto my head. You know, I had great regard and respect for Francis.
Yes, I could imagine you would have.
I was very drawn to Francis.
Was he contemporary?
Yes,
of course. Oh, he was. Oh.
And I was associated, not directly but indirectly, and I met him on several occasions. And he had, of course, wonderful psychic, as you would term, experiences.
Had he?
He was definitely psychic from the point of view that he was clairaudient.
Oh,
and
yes.
He sometimes had levitation of the body. He had great spiritual experiences, and indeed so did many other brothers. You know, when one withdraws, not that I withdrew from the world quite so much because of the kind of work I was doing, but when one withdraws from the material world and encloses oneself in the quietude and peace and the sanctuary, and one is all the time reflecting on things of the mind and of the spirit, you are able to withdraw to such an extent from material things that you are more perceptive, obviously, of things of the spirit, and you're able to overcome to a great extent many of the bodily drawbacks. It's an extraordinary thing. Of course, there were many things that went on in those times in the monasteries, and the retreats which, among some of the brothers, which were not, in my opinion, of any great value. I think that they were bad things, the chastisement and so on, and the wearing of the sackcloth and all that, achieved nothing, as far as I can see, although to some no doubt it was considered a great blessing or help. But I never saw eye to eye with many things. In fact, there were times when I think they were quite glad for me to leave the order and go on one of my trips or tours.
I see, like the headmaster.
I was a person of hot temper or anything like that. I wouldn't say I was hot tempered, I learned to subdue that. By nature I was, but I was very forthright. And there were many things which I did not like and didn't see eye to eye with, and I tried as far as it's in my power to change. But rules are rules and regulations are regulations. And it was very difficult. Some of the older brothers, and I'm talking about when I was a younger man, some of the older brothers really thought that, well, that I was too hot-headed and too anxious to make change. And indeed, sometimes they thought that I was not as spiritual as I might have been. Their idea often of spirituality was to subject the flesh, to subject themselves. Well, I believe in subjection to a certain extent, but at the same time, I think they went to such limits that it struck me as being rather stupid. I was not always able to make them see my point of view, of course, and I was often in trouble with them. But they were fond of me, and they respected and regarded me, and they knew too that I was highly useful in regard to medicines. And when I look back now, as I clearly do remember this incarnation, perhaps more than most or more than many, I can see that I was a person of, well, a strong mind, strong will, but I think in the right sense, I'm sure I was. But they sometimes resented it, but, you know, I can see the funny side of it too. And of course I've met many of the brothers on this side, and they too can see the error and the mistakes. And that is another thing, of course, which makes me realize how today, although there have been such changes, even in religious orders and in ideas in regard to the conduct and so on, there's still much room for improvement, and there's still much stupidity going on. If you could see as we can, and I do, because I often go to some of these orders, these places where they are congregated together in quietitude and away from the world as such, it seems at times, in many respects, rather a stupid and pointless way of life. I know there are many who do good work and many who, by doing what they do, are achieving a great deal for themselves and for others, but there's still much which is of no value at all. One must remember that one is put into life to serve. I think it's so important to remember that one is put into the world to serve humanity, to serve, to give of oneself, to give of life, not to take or not to withdraw, not to live selfishly, as indeed some of these people do live, without realizing it, very selfishly, because they're concerned too much with self.
May I ask, do you see these incarnations in picturization in the ether?
Yes.
You said you could do
most
that.
Most instances, most cases, yes.
Oh, I see.
If I want to tune in to a certain period of time, even if it's nothing to do with myself,
yes.
You see, the point is that everything that has happened that is of any real value, or anything that is important, any great event, I don't necessarily mean wars and things, because those things are best forgotten, and when one ceases to think of them, they no longer exist. But if one wants to enter into a different period of time, one wishes to go back, you see, the point is this, that if one can go forward in time, then there's no reason to think that you cannot go back. What has happened is still in a sense there, but as time marches forward and as human beings go forward in their experience, then that which is in the background, that which is in the past, becomes less and less important and becomes dimmer, but it's still in a sense there if you wish to exert yourself to perceive it. One, you see, because you're sitting in a room you've never been in the other room and you don't know of its existence, doesn't mean to say it doesn't exist.
No,
it's there.
Of course not.
And until you have been taken into that room, you don't know what it is like or what its furnishings are and so on and so on. In other words, there's much that's in existence But one may know nothing about it, or no desire to know anything about it, and in consequence to you it, you might as well say it doesn't exist, but it's still there.
Yes. Does it distress you at all, looking
no,
back?
No, not now, yeah. Because one learns from it, and one realizes that it's a good thing that one can have this ability to learn from the past. Of course, one automatically learns from the past. One learns from all sorts of things, mistakes particularly. That's why people should realize that often it is the mistake or the mistakes that one has made and the things that one has regretted most and the things that have caused perhaps the most unhappiness. These things are in a sense to be regretted at the time. Because everyone wants good health, for instance, everyone wants life to be smooth and pleasant, and of course naturally one wants that to be like that, but the point is that one does learn from suffering. It isn't until you've suffered that you can appreciate other people's suffering.
Yes,
and in the evolution of the human soul, one must go through many, many vicissitudes and many complexities of life. One must experience all things, good, bad, and indifferent. One must be male and female. One cannot be a complete individual, if I can use the expression individual. One cannot be a complete person until you've suffered and experienced all things common to all people. It is only then that you can begin to leave, as it were, the mundane and the material and rise above these things and become a more perfected human being or a more complete soul. The evolution of the soul must be, as it were, given the experiences of all kinds. One must suffer, one must be of joy and happiness. In other words, one must, to be a complete individual, one must go through all the multitude of experiences that lives can offer. Cannot become, you see, people always assume wrongly that one material life, one material body is the be-all and the end-all from birth to the grave.
Well, they
it's
say
only
they
an incident.
Yes, they think they ought to be able to learn the rest on the other side.
Yes, well, of course one does. Mm. I'm not suggesting that you can learn all in your world. Of course you don't, but it's the training ground, it's the formative ground, it's the planting ground, if you like, of the seed.
Yes.
But the true blossoming and the coming to full fruition can only be over here.
Yes.
Man must realize that he is, as it were, many men, not one, but many, and yet one and the same. It's the same spirit animating through all the various conditions of life and varying lives, bringing itself to a higher realization and understanding and becoming, as it were, a complete whole. We are all part of the one divine source of light and life, and we are all part of a great plan. We only perceive a small percentage of it. We perceive just a small glimmer, but it is this glimmer that makes possible the full light in due course. When we ourselves have made it possible by our thoughts and our actions and our spiritual growth, so we become illuminated by gradual experience.
Yes.
Anyway, I should tell you more another time about other experiences.
Yes.
But there's a lot I'd like to be able to tell you about this particular life, which I think is of particular interest.
Well, shall we have that again next time?
Because I want to tell you about my coming to England and coming to Glastonbury.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Well,
yeah.
I must go now.
Yes. Oh,
goodbye,
it's been...
and bless you and all
thank
my
you.
Love. Bye-bye.
It's been so thrilling.
Yes,
goodbye.
Bye-bye, dear.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mickey.
Wasn't he interesting?
Yes. Today?